Kicking off our second East Coast Conference podcast episode of the spring semester is none other than our commish. Welcome back to the pod, Jess.
Hey, Nikki. Thanks for having me again. I love this mid-year check-in that we're going to talk about today.
Before we look ahead to spring 2026, let's recap the fall, because what a fall it was in the East Coast Conference. We opened the fall with our ECC Cross Country Championships on October 25th at Sunken Meadow State Park. Roberts Wesleyan swept their 11th straight, talk about a dynasty, men's and women's titles, with Roberts Rachel Horner Richardson winning the women's 5K title, and our next guest on today's podcast, CJ Johnson of Damon, winning the men's 8K title. What a day it was.
Absolutely, Nikki. It was a gorgeous day. So a great fall day. You couldn't ask for anything better at Sunken Meadow State Park. And Queens did a fantastic job hosting us. So nod to them for doing a great job for our student athletes and putting on a stellar event. I think collectively, we also enhanced our operations a little bit, provided a little bit more for our student athletes, whether it's signage, setup, whatever it may be. I felt good about that. But to your point, you know, we had two separate institutions that won the individual races with, as you said, CJ Johnson and Rachel Horner Richardson. And then collectively, just Roberts Wesleyan as a combined team taking the trophy home again. It is quite a feat for that program to continue as they are. We are seeing the development and growth of our other programs, so you never know in future years. Yeah, it was a great day. It was fun, good weather, and I'm really excited for our winners out there.
The Red Hawks men and women went on to play second at the NCAA East Regional Championship to qualify for the NCAA Championship out in Kenosha, Wisconsin, while CJ Johnson also competed at NCAAs after earning an at-large berth after a seventh place finish at the regional meet. Really good showing at the regional meet for a ton of our conference teams, but let's talk a little bit more about Roberts Wesleyan men and women and CJ Johnson representing the ECC on the national stage.
Yeah, I'm super proud of them to have them representing the East Coast Conference. You know, watching them perform, obviously we got to do it in person at our own event, but then seeing them on the more national stage, and that's where the best of the best runners are. And for us to have that representation is really, you know, I'm really proud of them for how they performed. They should be proud of themselves for showing up and not only representing their institution, but our conference. So I think it's great. You're going out to Wisconsin, so I'm sure there's maybe some different elements that they had to get accustomed to. But ultimately, they went out there, they did their best, and that's really all that we could ask of them.
We then held our men's and women's soccer championships on Saturday, November 15th. ECC men's soccer regular season champion Queens hosted Roberts Wesleyan under the lights at Knights Field in Flushing, New York, in an exciting match that ultimately went to a penalty kick shootout. A pair of all ECC second team selections in Roberts' Jack Hobson and Queens' Killian Heaney scored during regulation, and after a 1-1 draw, the Red Hawks edged the Knights 4-3 on PKs.
It was a wild night. It really was. Obviously, Queens coming in as regular season champions, and I was there the week before to watch them. So I knew they were ready. I knew they were hungry to come in and get that title and that championship. But obviously, you know, Roberts is coming down. They have the same opportunity to get to that trophy. So the evening itself, it was a little bit chilly. We even had a rain delay. So halfway through the game, we had to stop. Lightning was in the forecast. So we had to take an extra 30 minutes to get our folks situated and make sure the student athletes were safe from that element. But after that passed, they came out and they were ready to go. And yeah, it went to PKs. And, you know, I think for soccer, that is always tough, especially in a championship game where you have to go to PKs. But it just goes to show that it's anyone's game. Anybody could win. Queens was obviously a little upset not getting that win, but they should really still be proud of a successful season that they had. And Roberts, too. They should be proud of what they accomplished and battling it out for both of them. So always tough to see, you know, a team that doesn't advance, but both programs did really well this season, and it was an exciting game to watch.
Quick turnaround the next day, ECC women's soccer regular season champion Mercy hosted Roberts Wesleyan. Another chilly day at Mercy Field in Dobbs Ferry, New York. All ECC third team back Jenna Northup scored for the Red Hawks in the 17th minute. And that was really the story, along with Roberts' defense, as the defense stood tall and Roberts Wesleyan won the title.
Yeah, let's talk about the elements again. You started off with it. It was a cold day. It was windy. So the wind was whipping. Another factor, the night before we were dealing with rain, the next day we're dealing with wind. I mean, that's what you get later on in the fall with these championships, right? So same thing. Roberts and Mercy they were tight. The student athletes were hungry for the game, for the win. So yeah, Roberts was a 3 seed. They came in. They were the underdog to, Mercy's stellar season. So the overall contest was really competitive, exciting to watch. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we had a winner and Roberts prevailed. So it was kind of special for that institution to have both men and women become champions in the same sport. So that doesn't happen often at all. But to Mercy's credit, they had a fantastic season. Same thing, they played really well, similar to the Queens men. So overall, I think back and I look at both soccer programs, men and women, we have teams in there that anybody could take it. Anybody could be the champion. So you never know. And that's why postseason is just another, wipe the regular season clean and you have that opportunity during postseason to get that trophy in the end.
The Roberts men entered the Super Region 1 championship as the 10 seed, where they faced Wilmington in the first round, while the women's side saw Mercy as the number 3 seed and Roberts Wesleyan as the number 6 seed face each other in the first round of the NCAA East Regional Championship. It was, I think, 5 days later. The Mavs took that one in PKs 4-3 to reach the second round against number 2 Franklin Pierce out of the Northeast 10.
Yeah, so the regionals was wild for both of our men's and women's programs. I'm sure Mercy came to the field with a little bit more of a grit to them. Obviously, they wanted to defend what happened, as you said, 5 days before, but Roberts still came out strong. So proud of both programs to getting to that point, to play each other. And as I said earlier, going to PKs, it's tough. That means you had a really hard-fought regulation game that you can hang your hat on and be proud of. So I think by them competing and getting to the PKs, yeah, it is tough, but I'm really proud of our programs and what they've represented for our conference.
And then we closed out our ECC Fall Championship slate with women's volleyball, with Mercy hosting the 2-day event from November 21st through 22nd at Judge Athletic Center in Dobbs Ferry, New York. Dominant all season, the ECC regular season champion Mavericks swept Yeovil in the semis and Molloy in the final to win their first ECC championship since 2001. The storyline there was definitely the Mercy Mavericks.
So yeah, Nikki, Mercy had an amazing season this year. They were the ones that everybody was targeting on because they just had a stellar group of student athletes that their performances went well. They were in the championship playoffs last year. And I think this year they had that goal in mind to get to the finals and really to win the trophy. And they did. And I give them credit. They worked really hard, but it's not to say that our competition was easy. They played against Molloy again for however multiple times during the season, which I said earlier, it's always tough. And they also played against Yeovil, which was the defending champions from last year. So really to get through those two squads is tough. And I give Mercy credit for sticking it through. It was a long season, many matches. Their determination and their grind, obviously override any type of exhaustion or maybe injuries that they were dealing with. They had a goal in mind, they set it, and they went after it. Having them host and come through with that goal was exciting. It was an exciting event to watch all the matches from our student athletes. The energy, sometimes we have these gyms where the space might be limited, but I think that creates the great atmosphere of a championship. Everybody was up, they were excited, they were cheering, and you could tell that the student athletes felt it for both sides.
Mercy and Molloy made the NCAA East Regional Championship, and just like our women's soccer duo, were matched up in the first round as the number 3 and the number 6 seeds. In an extremely contested matchup that had fans on the edge of their seats and represented the ECC very proudly, the Mavericks edged past the Lions 3-2. It went 5 sets. To your point earlier, it is tough to face a team multiple times in a season. Molloy came ready to battle. It was one of the most exciting 5-setters of the year in the region. Mercy then took down number 7 Holy Family 3-1 to reach the NCAA East Regional Final against Bentley out of the Northeast 10.
So yeah, Nikki, when you talk about the East Regional Final and the games that Mercy had to play to get there, it was really exciting. To your point, they had to face Molloy again. Never easy, always tough. Then they went on to number 7 Holy Family, and then they finally went up against Bentley. And Bentley has been in the number 1 seed pretty much all season long in the East region. So Mercy going 22-5 overall, getting to the finals. I give them lots of credit, and I'm really proud of what they've accomplished. And they were just one win away for moving on. So that is something for them to really be proud of, to get that far, not only for them, for their institution, and for the ECC. So it was great to see our teams continue after the first round and continue on.
The East Coast Conference has partnered with TicketSauce, a cutting-edge event ticketing and marketing platform designed to support athletic programs, campus events, and fan engagement as its ticketing platform for all ticketed 2025-26 ECC championships. Included in this collaboration are a modern, mobile-friendly ticketing experience, flexible on-site and online ticketing tools, custom branding and white label support, and more. TicketSauce, a proud partner of the East Coast Conference. Now looking forward to the spring. Tons of championships, tons of new opportunities for our member institutions to compete for trophies, AQs, and more. We have our ECC Indoor Track and Field Championships coming up in February, and our ECC Men's and Women's Basketball and Women's Bowling Championship after that in March. In April, we'll host our ECC Esports, Men's Volleyball, and Men's and Women's Tennis Championships, while May, we'll see our ECC Men's and Women's Lacrosse, Softball, and Baseball Championships.
So as we look ahead to the spring semester, we just did a nice rewind of the fall. I'm excited that we're moving forward. But to your point, we have a ton of championships in the spring. This is really where we are on the move. We are planning multiple events. We are looking at different areas that we have to plan for. So I think the spring will be have us energized. It will have us on our feet. But I'm excited to see where we're going to end up. A lot of our locations are higher seed, so anybody can host and anybody can put their best foot forward to be able to secure the championship. So I'm excited where we're going to have our events this year. So we're ready to go. I know you and me and the rest of our staff will be prepared to present that great experience for our student athletes. It's a grind and it's an exciting one. This is what makes the job fun.
One of the locations that we actually do have determined and that we're really looking forward to this year is that of our ECC Men's and Women's Tennis Championship. That'll run on April 24th and 25th at the USTA Billie Jean King National Tennis Center in Flushing, New York. A combined tournament, a combined championship, fantastic opportunity for our ECC tennis student athletes. And we're looking forward to presenting them with that experience. A big project our membership has been diligently working on has been a new scheduling process. And our scheduling has come together as a result of a very collaborative effort for equitable schedules across our membership, which is, of course, always the goal. Let's talk more about this.
Sure. So let's step aside from actual events to what it takes to get to these events, right? Our student athletes need these quality schedule, and the credit to our membership, they worked collaboratively to have a scheduling system, an exercise, and to review all of our past schedules and see where we can improve. And as you mentioned, to make it as equitable as possible. We wanted to make sure that our student athletes are receiving the same standard of when they're participating, the format, their rest time, and travel time. And obviously the biggest one for us in D2 is miss class time. We want to make sure our student athletes miss as least as possible. So it was really intentional by our administrators, our ADs and SWAs to come together, to go through the logistics. And, we utilized a scheduling company, which was very helpful to navigate us through those different parameters. And at the end of the day, I think we landed on these schedules for next year that are really going to benefit the planning, our student athletes, and just the overall being consistent with all of our programs. And as you said, equitable for their performances moving forward.
In the fall, we started to talk about the initiative for the strategic plan. Can we give our listeners some insight into how that's going?
Yeah, so we are at the halfway point of the year and the halfway point of our scheduled timetable with the strategic plan. This past fall, we had our ad hoc group come together, develop some ideas, and in conjunction with Double L Consulting, Jill Wilson and her staff have been very helpful guiding us through this exercise. It's been an opportunity for our stakeholders, our administrators, our coaches, athletic trainers, FARs to be involved and really give some input on the outlook of the conference. And by collaboratively working together, the end result is to have a roadmap for the ECC for the next 3 to 5 years. So We are in the draft stage still. We're going through that. And I think the next round of review and thoughtful strategic thinking of our plan will be almost like we're getting there. We're getting down to the finalized stage. And hopefully, the goal is by the end of this academic year, we will have that draft finalized by our presidents at their spring meeting. So it's going good. I think ultimately, it'll give us a good spot and give us that direction. Collectively, where we want to go and where we want to take the conference. So I'm excited about it. We're halfway there. We just got more work to do.
Lots of good stuff here. Appreciate you taking the time with us today.
Nikki, thanks for having me. I enjoyed this check-in to share all the amazing stuff that our student athletes are accomplishing and what they're going to in the spring. So, with that, I want to wish them a healthy season for all of them that are participating. We look forward to seeing you out there and we look forward to giving out more trophies.
The East Coast Conference and Athletic Solutions are proud to announce a new partnership to empower student athletes through the launch of official NIL locker rooms. As the officially endorsed NIL store for the ECC, Athletic Solutions' innovative approach provides fans with direct access to officially licensed merchandise that supports all student athletes. This marks a significant step in expanding name, image, and likeness opportunities while strengthening the connection between fans and athletes at the ECC. Visit eccsports.athsolutions.shop today. Our second guest on this week's episode of the East Coast Conference podcast had himself quite the fall and is only continuing to excel this winter. We now welcome Damon University men's track and field distance junior standout CJ Johnson to the pod. Hi, CJ.
Hello, happy to be here.
Welcome. Nothing like a rust buster to get you back into the swing of things, right? After not racing since December 5th, you finally returned to action at the Brockport Saturday Night Rust Buster Invitational 2 weekends ago. And looking at your results, consider the rust busted. You dropped a 424 mile for second place and an 854 3K for third place, both collegiate PR times. You bested your mile PR by 6 seconds and your 3K PR by 17 seconds. CJ, it was your first sub 9 minute 3K at the college level. Take us through those performances.
I think first I had to start with we had done a couple of time trials a couple of days prior. And it goes to show that you never know exactly where you're at just based off of one thing, because I did those time trials and I ran a 440 mile and I was not very happy with that. But those performances, I had no idea how I was going to do, wasn't very sure, but it didn't shake me too much. I just knew I had to go out there and race, and just whatever the race brought to me is whatever it brought to me. I think the first lap of that mile, we went through in a 70-second 400, which is 440 mile pace. So we were substantially slower than what I had finished at, but just had to keep going. And it was a great race. I had a lot of fun. Definitely surprised myself a little bit. And then with the 3K, I went into it hoping to take down the previous school record, which was 903. Had no idea if I was going to do it because of the double, but just went out there. And once the legs started moving, I started hearing Coach Pete say the splits each 200. And I was like, all right, this is happening. All right, let's do this. So it was a great time, honestly. I was very surprised and happy.
The ECC Indoor Track and Field Championships are coming up quickly, February 15th at the Ocean Breeze Athletic Complex in Staten Island. In the mile, you placed sixth as a freshman in 2024 and third as a sophomore in 2025. In the 3K, you placed eighth as a freshman and sixth as a sophomore. What are your goals for indoor ECCs this year?
So when it comes to events, I'm not actually sure what event I'm going to do, but no matter what I do, I know I'll be able to do some damage, for lack of a better term. From 800 to 5K, I feel pretty confident in my abilities. So we'll see what I do. And the goal is just to get better, and whatever happens, happens. Of course, I would like to win, but the overall goal is just to have a good race, be better, and just make sure that I'm in a good place leading into outdoor training and for outdoor conference.
Like you just mentioned, we're not totally sure what you're going to be competing in yet at ECCs, but let's acknowledge the fact that it's a tough ECC double with the mile this year starting at 6:30 p.m. and then the 3K kicking off 95 minutes later at 8:05 p.m. Let's just look at the past 2 years. What's your process from the time when you end the mile to the time that you start the 3K?
It doesn't really change meat to meat, so I would say it would probably be similar to what I did at the Brockport Rust Buster. Right after a race, after the mile, let's say, I'll do a half a mile cool down or something. And then the big thing is fueling and just getting off the legs. Sitting down, cheering on my teammates, and just getting a couple of snacks in here or there, maybe a sandwich or something. That's the goal, is just to fuel, rest up, and be ready as soon as possible to be ready for the 3K. It's not really too complicated. It's just make sure you're rested up and ready to go for the next one, honestly. Make sure you're in a good mental space too. I like to be calm before I head into that second race rather than be hyped up like I do in the first race.
Okay, so indoor track though, it's never really calm. There's always noises and motion and movement. How do you mentally kind of come down in the midst of all of that?
Honestly, I'm pretty good at blocking out noise. Yeah, I have headphones, so I listen to music. But even maybe like 30 minutes out from a race, I'll stop listening to music and I'll just kind of sit there and I'll just be in my own thought and just think to myself about the race and how I want it to go. I'm pretty good at calming myself down before races and getting ready to go and just focusing on what's ahead.
Indoor track and field is exciting, but you are no stranger to excitement after the fall you had. For our fans that somehow missed this one, CJ won the ECC Cross Country Championships men's individual title, becoming Damon's first male athlete to take home that honor in program history. CJ, in our post-race interview, we spoke about what it felt like to stand there after that race as a champion. A couple of months of reflection, a little bit of distance from that event. Can you add to that response?
Honestly, sometimes I do forget that I won. It's still surreal whenever I do think about it because that really was such a great day. But I try not to focus on it too much because, yes, I won, but I need to be focused on what's next as well and need to focus on indoor championships and soon outdoor when that season comes around. And at this point, yes, I won championships once, but the goal now is to raise expectations for myself a little bit and can I do it again? That's the real question for myself. So that's the standard I hold myself to now, that it's awesome that, yes, I did it once, but can I do it again and can I do it even better? Can I win championships and then place better at regionals and then go on to nationals and have a better performance there? Can I lead my team better and come into the next following track seasons even better afterwards? Those are the goals now. So I try not to focus on cross country championships too much. It was great that it happened, don't get me wrong, but can't focus on it too much. I still got a whole nother year left after this to focus on.
Sure, definitely. And I'm going to go back one more time just with this next question, but you do have another year to focus on. And you got indoor now, head into outdoor. And then when you go into cross country next year, you'll have that experience of a regional performance of the ages and then NCAA. So you went on to place seventh at the NCAA East Regional Championship this year. And then after a few days of decision making by the committee that had to feel like years for you, you were announced as an at-large selection for the 2025 NCAA Cross Country Championships in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Can you walk us through what that experience was like for you representing Damon and the ECC on the national stage?
It was insane. There's not many words to describe what it's like to be just standing there and realizing, wow, this is the biggest stage pretty much that I'm going to be at. So it was awesome. It was great. Kenosha was great with Coach Pete. And then I got to take Ethan Keating with me as well. And it was great to be there with him and experience that. I can't wait for next year to. Of course, the goal is to go there again, but to bring my teammates along with me. And I want them to have that experience of standing at the line with hundreds of other runners next to you and just looking out at the course and just being like, whoa, this is crazy. Because that's exactly how I felt. And it just ignites that fire of like, all right, I got to be back here and do it again because it was great.
Bringing your whole team, that would require a top three finish, as those are the AQs out of the East region. You feel like the Wildcats could be a top three team next year?
I know we can be a top three team next year. I know we can.
You chose to attend Damon University as a Division II student athlete by way of Baltimore, Maryland, because you felt you would be able to grow both academically and athletically and be able to work hard towards your goals in an environment of supportive people, which really describes Damon, in my opinion. You're a biochemistry major with dreams of being either a toxicologist or a forensic scientist. What got you into that line of study?
So I've always had a fascination with science since I was little. I actually wanted to be a paleontologist when I was really young, but slowly I became not 10 years old. So I started thinking about things a little bit more logically. For some reason, I'm also attracted to the things that challenge me a lot. I wasn't always good at running, so here we are. And chemistry was actually the first class that I did terribly in high school. I did not do great. But for some reason, doing bad at it only intrigued me more. So I took AP Bio my senior year, and I just thought about it. I was like, I think what I want to do is biochem. It just combines both things in a way that I think I'll enjoy a lot. So that's my reasoning.
CJ, you recently celebrated your 21st birthday on January 16th, which was a day before you crushed both of those PRs. So big birthday weekend for you. That's
Oh,
awesome.
yeah.
I won't ask you what you wished for because then, your wish won't come true and we don't want that. But out of all of your birthdays in your life, what's one of your favorite, most memorable birthday presents you've ever received?
It's hard to answer. I think I would have to say my 18th birthday. My 18th birthday, I actually spent entirety of it in Western New York because those were during both of my visits. I visited Damon and Roberts. And during both of those visits, got to meet a lot of nice people, and I got to be up there with my family, see new places that I'd never been before. So that kind of birthday where I'm just around friends and family and just having a good time. It doesn't need to be anything too crazy. I was just honestly living life, and I think, that was the best part about it. I got to see, all right, these are the places that I'm going to be for the next 4 years. And I think that was the best part about it, just like moving on, getting older.
CJ and the Wildcats of Damon University return to action this Friday and Saturday at the Youngstown State Mid-Major Invitational in Youngstown, Ohio. You're a cool dude, CJ. Best of luck the
Thank
rest of
you.
the way.
Thank you.
The East Coast Conference has partnered with Collegiate Travel Network to create ecctravel.com, a travel booking platform designed to offer new personal and professional lodging options for ECC fans, alumni, and all travelers. The new platform provides hotel discounts up to 50% off with almost all global hotel chains and is customized to help ECC fans, alumni, and all travelers save on lodging expenses. The site offers exceptional consumer value while providing an avenue to financially support the league and its member institutions. Visit ecctravel.com today. It is not often that we are fortunate enough to host a four-time NCAA champion, Olympian, or professional athlete, and we get to do all three right now with our next guest. Former East Coast Conference student athlete out of Roberts Wesleyan University, Bryn King, is here on the podcast today. Bryn, thanks for being here.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Bryn, by way of The Woodlands, Texas, you began your collegiate career at Division I Duke, but transferred to Roberts Wesleyan for your final 2 years with the opportunity to, of course, work under two-time Olympic pole vault medalist and 2012 Olympic champion Jen Sir, Roberts Wesleyan class of 2004. Assuming Coach Sir was a big part of that, but what factors went into your opportunity and decision to transfer to Roberts?
Yeah, so there was a few things. Well, first off, I had two extra seasons of eligibility because I did do my full 4 years at Duke. I got my degree from Duke and everything. So at the time, which seemed really unfortunate for me that I had COVID that took out a whole year for me and an ACL surgery that took out another whole year, it actually ended up kind of being a blessing in disguise that let me have 2 years after I was able to graduate undergrad and get my degree to go somewhere where I really felt like I could put my all into pole vault. That was kind of my main focus. I was like, okay, I kind of did my school. I focused on that. That mattered a lot to me, but I got that out of the way. And then I was like, I want to go to a new school and I'm going to pick it simply based off of where I think I could jump the highest. So that was a big factor, being blessed with two extra seasons of eligibility. Another thing was the coaching. So I had actually met Rick and Jen in high school. They used to come down to Texas and train for like 6 months out of the year because it's freezing up in Rochester, New York, and no one wants to train there. So they come down to Texas, and my high school coach actually brought me to the pole facility where they would practice. So I was able to meet them. Kind of stayed in touch a little bit, not too much, but if I saw them at meets and stuff, I would say hi. And so then when I decided to go into the transfer portal after graduating from Duke, Jen reached out to me. I knew who she was, not only because she's one of the best to ever do the sport, but also I kind of knew her personally from meeting her back in high school. So she was like, hey, I just got a job at my alma mater, actually. I'm not really sure what type of schools you are looking for to transfer. And at the time, I was transferring out of Duke thinking, okay, I'm going to go to another big Power Five D1 school. That was just kind of what I had in my mind, the type of schools I was looking for. And she's like, yeah, so I got a job at Roberts Wesleyan. It's where I went to school, little tiny D2 school up in Rochester, New York. And I was kind of like, okay, not like what I was expecting, but like I had told myself that I was going to go where I thought I could jump the highest. And I was like, so why would I count out a school with amazing coaching just because I want to stay with the D1 Power Five type thing? So I was like, I'm interested. Tell me about it. So she kind of gave me her pitch of the school and how she wanted to start up a vault program and that type of stuff. And by the end of the call, I was sold and was like, yeah, this is what I'm looking for. I had talked to a few coaches and I had left those conversations kind of being like, okay, Okay, that's a possibility. I could maybe see myself there, but this was the first call that I was like, yeah, that totally aligned with the vision that I didn't even necessarily know that I had for myself, but that's exactly what I want. So by the end of the call, I was like, yep, I'm coming to Roberts. Never seen it before. Gotta come up and visit, see what I'm getting myself into. But I was in.
You definitely jumped pretty high and got some pretty high marks. So at Roberts, you were a four-time NCAA national champion, winning the indoor and outdoor pole vault in the 2024 and 2025 seasons. You broke an incredible amount of records along the way. You rank 11th all-time indoor among all NCAA divisions with your leap of 4.66 meters at last March's NCAA indoor championship, and fifth all-time among all NCAA divisions with your leap of 4.75 meters, 15 feet 7 inches at the Texas Relays. Now, for Division II, all time between indoor and outdoor combined, you own. Do you know how many of the top marks you own?
No,
No
I'm not sure.
idea. You own the top 20 marks all time for Division II. I have a feeling I know what your favorite meet was, but I want to see if I'm right. What was your favorite collegiate performance?
Okay, I don't know if I can necessarily break it down in one, so I'm going to give you two, and they're for very different reasons. My first one, I'm going to say, is my first indoor nationals that I did at Roberts. I had never been to an NCAA nationals meet. I never made it at Duke. That was my goal. I ended up like 18th one time they take top 16. So just never quite made it. And Roberts had never had an NCAA D2 national champion in history of any sports. Going in there, I was leading Division II at the time. So I felt kind of like a lot of pressure on myself. And not just because I wanted it personally, but because I felt like I was doing it for Roberts as a whole. And I really wanted to stand up on the podium in the middle first with the Roberts uniform on. I felt like that would be really special, a true testament to everything that the school did for me, taking a chance on me, all the chances my coaches took on me to be able to bring me in, and just the amount of work that we had all kind of put in as a collective. So that has to be up there just because it was the first nationals for not only me, but Roberts to win. And then the second one is definitely Texas Relays this past year. I broke the overall NCAA record, which not a lot of people get to say that they do that. And I also did it in my home state. I love Texas Relays. I had probably about 20 family and friends up in the stands. They all came to watch me, which was really exciting. They don't get to come up here that often because it's pretty far. But just being down in Texas, I also had a really rough indoor season. Nationals ended up going pretty well for me, but I had COVID, the flu, and pneumonia all last indoor. And was just beat up physically, mentally. I was pulling out of meets left and right because my body just physically couldn't handle it. So that was one of the first meets I did outdoor, and I was finally healthy, and I just kind of wanted a comeback from just being absolutely beat up in indoor. And I was on, my technique was on, my jump. I just knew that was the day. The weather was great, and to be able to put up 75 in a stadium like that too, Texas Relays is super exciting. The runway is also right next to the stands. Usually it's like on the inside of the track, but like the crowd is right on you. I love Texas Relays. I love that meet specifically. So, between those two, kind of different reasons, but they both are special to me.
Yeah, really great answers. My guess was the Texas Relays. The video from your event, the stands were packed. Like you said, the stands are right there by the pole vault. It had to have been a really cool experience.
Yeah, it was super cool. The energy was through the roof. It was just the women's pole vault was like kind of right in the middle of the day, which is perfect. The stands are packed and everything. And it's hard to beat a meet with that much energy. The energy definitely helps, and they're right on top of you too. And I personally love that.
You placed third at the US Olympic Trials at the University of Oregon's historic Hayward Field late in June 2024 to earn a spot on Team USA alongside fellow vaulters Bridget Williams and Katie Moon. In dramatic fashion, you cleared 4.73 meters on your first attempt to meet the Olympic standard. You kind of had to wait and feel it out to see what others would do, but you made the team. So I want to hear about the Olympics. You and I had spoken for a video feature just before you left for Paris. Can you just give us and our listeners a little bit of behind the scenes? Can you tell us about the Olympic Village, the environment, whatever you remember from it?
Yeah, it was super cool. I'm glad you like bring up the Olympic Village because that was probably the thing that took me by like most surprise. I mean, obviously I love sports and stuff, so I grew up watching the Olympics, but you never really get to see the behind the scenes and like what the village entails. So I wasn't quite sure what I was gonna get into when they dropped me off at the doors of it. Walking in there, it was super cool. It was just like a bunch of different apartment buildings, and they're all like completely decorated for the country, whatever country is living in there, and you like only stay with your own country. And then when you're walking around the village, you have to be in your like team issued gear. So you know exactly where someone is from just because you're like, I was like decked out in American flag stuff like all the time. So it's a really cool way to meet people. And then like walking into the dining hall, that was a big thing at the Paris Olympics. You could see all the flags from every country that has someone competing there. And then you all eat together. So you get to like meet a lot of different people. It's also like its own little city. Like we had our own bakery, we had our own post office. We had our own hair salon, nail salon, like a lot of different things. It's all free, which is super cool too. So I was ate way more bread and croissants than I needed to once I was done because the bakery was right outside of my room. So I'd walk back there every single time. The village was super cool and staying there for like 2 weeks, it like almost kind of became home. It's like your own little city, you're blocked off. So that I think is cool just because you never get to see behind the scenes of it. So actually like living through that was really cool. And then I can't count out like the actual meet. Something that will always live in my head was walking into the stadium for the first time when it was filled, because we actually get to do a walkthrough. I can't remember if it was a day before or a few days before, but so they let all the athletes go out onto the track. So you can run on the track, test it out. I kind of like got to like check out the pole vault pit. But during that time, the stadium is empty. So it just kind of feels like any other track. You're like, okay, it's cool. It's a cool purple track. Like you're just out there. But then when I came out to compete, I've never been in a stadium with that many people, like and being down on the floor. It just like the noise, the lights flashing, everything was like overwhelming, but in a really cool way. I will always remember you like walk out behind this little wall thing, and all of a sudden, just like boom, you're hit with the sound, the lights, the everything. It was cool. It was a lot of pressure. You could tell a very intense meet. I mean, it happens once every 4 years. People are anticipating it. It's like it's a dream. That's what every athlete is like working up to. So you can just feel the intensity in the stadium. And I didn't end up competing as well as I wanted to. It had been a really long season for me. Like mentally, I think we counted, I competed over 33 times that season. That is a lot of times, but obviously I had to keep going. I mean, you get the chance of a lifetime, but I don't think I was mentally, didn't have that mental energy left to kind of compete how I wanted to. But it gave me the opportunity to see what was at the next level, feel the intensity of the women competing. I also went back and watched the finals, and I was pretty close down by the actual track because I could watch from where the athletes were allowed to sit. It was just that next level. Like I had already competed at pretty high levels, but this is it. This is like the peak of women's pole vault. And so it gave me, like, it kind of lit a fire underneath me and gave me something to work towards. I was a participant in that Olympics. My goal after that was be like, okay, I don't want to just participate. Like, I want to be there to compete for the medals and everything. So it was super cool to be a part of it, but it also gave me like a lot of inspiration and like, okay, I got something to work towards. Like there's a whole nother level out there that I had never experienced before. Super cool also to wear the Team USA uniform. That was like unreal to look back and see pictures of myself in it. I'm like, wow, it's like an honor to represent your country.
We were looking forward to having you compete for the ECC for your final indoor season this winter, but you forfeited your final indoor season of college eligibility, but it was for a very good reason. Per your own mantra, you believe in betting on yourself. And this past July, you signed a 4-year professional contract with Adidas that runs through the 2028 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. First of all, we're extremely proud of you at the ECC. What has this opportunity been like for you?
It's been super exciting. So, yeah, I signed it right after D2 Nationals last year. So, my first meet out in the Adidas uniform was USA's. So, that was super exciting to be able to compete in the Adidas uniform. And then I actually decided, since I just signed a contract, my agent put me in a few meets over in Europe. So, I did my first Diamond League meet. That was awesome. It was cool. It was a street vault in Poland. So, super cool. All women's like street event thing. I had pole vault, high jump, and shot put, I think. So, all the girls were out there.
What does a street event mean?
So it wasn't in a stadium. They had like the meet in the stadium, but they decided to take those three women's events and they set us all up in like the street, literally in the middle of like the city. So yeah, it was like a raised runway for us and then whole elevated platform for a shot put and high jump. And so that way people just walking down the street, you could stop. Like they had like a little set of stands, but it was also just like roped off and open. So people shopping, doing whatever they wanted to, like throughout the day would come over and watch the event. It's trying to get like more exposure to track and field and especially women's sports in general. So I think those are really cool. I love those. They're usually very high energy because it's people that have never seen this before. And pole vault's a really fun event to watch. So you are walking down the street and see people jumping over 15-foot bars. And you're like, wow, that's awesome. So that was really cool. Really cool to be a part of.
Obviously, are you looking forward to another crack at an Olympics appearance?
Yes, I am looking forward to competing at the 2028 trials. Obviously, you got to make the team on the day to be able to go to the Olympics. And US women's pole vault is one of the hardest teams to make. We are very stacked in pole vault, which is also awesome to be a part of. So, yeah, I'm looking forward. I plan on being out there at trials and giving it a shot again to see if I can be one of the three women on the team to represent the country.
You're busy training, but not too busy to give back as you now serve as a graduate assistant coach with the Red Hawks, where you help in a variety of areas, including recruiting. To no one's surprise, the Roberts pole vaulters are excelling this year with Austin Melvin, Taryn Metz, and Noah Leathersich on the men's side, and Karis Kraft and Kennedy Benjamins on the women's side, all meeting the NCAA provisional mark at this point already in the season. Have you enjoyed the coaching side of things?
We have a huge team this year. I think there's like 18 vaulters, I think total, which is really big for a pole vault team. You usually don't have that many. And so it's a lot of fun to help coach. I know a huge part of my success was the coaches that I had. So I've been here longer than most of them. They put a lot of effort into me and stuff. So I have a lot of knowledge that now I get to be able to share with the newer people coming in. And it is such a big team. So I'm able to kind of step in when they're working with other people. So like everyone has someone working with them. And it's just, I have a different perspective. I made these changes and learned everything that they have showed me within the past 2 years. That's super recent. So I can relate a lot to the people coming in, a lot of the stuff that they are working on, whether that be like technical and pole vault, mental, or like lifting type stuff, is stuff that either I learned really recently because I've only been here for 2 years, or stuff that I'm still working on. So I can kind of share my own personal views into how I was able to achieve some of the stuff that they're asking for. And then I also will train with them still. I'm like half coach, half training partner. I was kind of saying before, I thought one of the biggest things that helped me make it to the Olympics is about a month or two before, Jen kind of came back and started doing drills and lifting with me. And I think that made me a lot better. I mean, that's just someone who was at the very top of the sport. And I would watch her do a drill that I had thought I'd been doing correctly and stuff the whole time and be like, okay, wow, either there's something technical I need to change. Mine doesn't look like that. Or even just the intensity and the precision level. It's like something I had never seen before. I was like, okay, I didn't know I could step up my drills. So now I kind of would like to see or hope that I could be that for the people on the team now. So I'll do drills with them. And you can always learn something from working out with someone who jumps higher than you. Like, how do they do that? What do their drills look like? What intensity level are they at? What mentally do they think about to get that? So I kind of try to pay forward what Jen did for me.
Brynn and her Redhawks are back in action at a pair of meets this weekend at the Youngstown State Annual Collegiate Invitational in Youngstown, Ohio, and at the Cornell Invitational in Ithaca, New York. Brynn is headed with the Cornell group this weekend, but in the future, we know that we'll be seeing her at the 2028 Summer Olympics. We're all rooting for you in the ECC. Brynn, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It was great.
And that's a wrap on Season 1, Episode 16 of the East Coast Conference podcast. You can stream, download, and subscribe through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the official ECC website at eccsports.org/podcast. For ECC Commissioner Jessica Grasso, Damon University Men's Indoor Track and Field Junior CJ Johnson, and Roberts Wesleyan University Women's Track and Field alum Bryn King, this is ECC Associate Commissioner Nikki Philpott saying we'll see you next week right here on the East Coast Conference podcast.